Cairo 906. Stacy Joe Ross, a.k.a. I Can Only Imagine. Stacy.
Hello.
Wow, Stacy.
Hi.
Stacy, you remember you and I talk about the Nazi menace? You remember? We talked about it a couple of times.
Oh, all the time. Yeah. When do we not talk about the Nazi menace?
I try to, like, warn people about the fascist Nazi menace, and they don't listen to me, and they mock me, and they belittle me, and then a Nazi literally commits an act of domestic terrorism, and I tried to tell everybody that the Nazi menace is alive and well in the United States. Stacy, I kind of want to talk about the scene, but I also kind of want to talk about the coverage around the Buffalo shooter. They're kind of linked, but I don't know if I can necessarily articulate it in the right way.
So you might just separate them, but two different conversations.
Right. Okay. So I noticed this thing when I was looking at Reddit today about kind of an overall reaction to the shooter in Buffalo. Mm-hmm. And there's this really interesting tactic that happens every single time there is an act of domestic violence or a cop on black man crime. I don't know the best way to phrase that. When a black man is injured or killed by the police, or a black woman is injured or killed by the police, there's this really interesting thing that people do, and I don't necessarily understand why. They pull up from that weekend the amount of shootings that happened in Chicago. They did this during George Floyd. Do you remember this?
For every single shooting that ever happens, it's always going to be,
every single time. So the Monday
whataboutism.
Exactly. So the Monday after George Floyd was murdered, I remember listening to Mark Stein filling in for Rush Limbaugh. No relation, by the way.
I was going to ask. Okay.
No, he's a Canadian Nazi, and I am not a Nazi. And right.
And importantly, not Canadian.
And
More importantly than that, not Canadian.
So, and he goes on this, like, really interesting, it's a really interesting rhetorical device if you're 5 years old, which is you say, everyone's focusing on this George Floyd character. Why aren't we focusing on the real issue, i.e. all of the violence in Chicago? Why aren't the Democrats out here? I'm going to tell you something, Stacey Joe Ross. Let me get on my high horse really quick. Why aren't the Democrats out here? The Democrats, okay? Now, Chicago is a Democrat stronghold, okay? So why aren't all the Democrats here out here talking about the Nazi menace? Well, why can't they handle what's going on in their own stronghold? I'll tell you why. Because the Democrats are the party of crime. The Democrats are the party of violence. They don't actually want to fix these problems, Stacey. They want to make them worse so people keep voting them in. And that's why this weekend, instead of focusing on the 33 shot in Chicago, we're focusing on this neo-Nazi and this domestic terrorist. That's what's going on.
I'm imagining you delivering this whole speech on top of a velociraptor. And it's like horrible video editing.
But like, if that sounds familiar to people, that is because, like, it is such a disingenuous rhetorical device, and so many of my conservative friends love to use it, and it's like, I'm so tired of it, because I know it's like a puzzle. It's an equation. I take a certain amount of buzzwords, and I throw them together, and then I toss up a headline from ABC7 in Chicago, 33 shot, 5 fatally in weekend violence, CPD says. That does not, in any way, shape, or form, negate the fact that there was a domestic terrorist and a Nazi who walked into a supermarket intentionally to kill black people, right? So let's all just be big brain about this and not do this odd, like, whataboutism that I keep reading about all day today. And even right now, Stacey.
Yeah. I also think that it's done in a very specific, like, I wouldn't be surprised if the patterns of groups or people that do that are people who are trying to point out that violence isn't ever tied to race, which isn't true. We obviously know that violence is tied to all kinds of things. Sometimes it's random. Sometimes it's between men and women. Sometimes it's people who are of the same race against each other and people against other races. But you can find trends and you can find patterns. For instance, while men are certainly subject to domestic violence and abuse, there's like also an overwhelming number of like in domestic violence situations where there's like a gun violence or whatever. It's a gun used on the victim. Like, overwhelmingly, you're going to find women being like victims in those situations.
Yeah.
Does it mean it's always the case or exclusively the case? No. Does it mean that it's not very important to talk about violence towards men in those cases? No. Right. But it does mean that there's a pattern and you start looking for ways to address the pattern, because that means that something's wrong. And this is another case, right? Terrorism, like a hate crime, something where you look at it and you say, well, you know, I know that everyone can look at something and someone right now is saying, what about the DC sniper? And there's someone saying, you know, hey, there are instances of, you know, a black man who hated white people and decided to kill them. Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Like, in history. However, there is an overwhelming instance of examples of crimes being committed against black communities.
Exactly.
Whether, you know what I mean? Like, there are multiple examples of that, dating obviously back to and preceding or predating slavery, but also like far more recent examples. So what's the problem there? And that's, I think, what you're pointing to, Jack, and saying, like, you can talk about a problem while not saying that other problems don't matter.
Right.
I can talk about how white supremacy is a problem in that it fuels a lot of rage, especially of young men, right? We've talked about young men being more often perpetrators of gun violence than not. Mm-hmm. That's a problem. It doesn't mean it's exclusively that person, but how do you fix the problem? And I think that some people are so defensive, especially if they're in a group that's being seen as part of the problem, that instead of saying, yeah, how do we figure out how to make it to where, you know, this isn't something that's happening and we don't have a tragic loss of life for reasons like hate. Instead of just looking at it that way, it's trying to almost make it seem like it is more important to them to make it clear that there isn't a problem and that violence is random and violence just happens.
Wow, Stacey, super based. Wow. I think you just opened up this whole conversation. Because, okay, so I just, okay, Breitbart, front page right now, 33 shot during weekend in Mayor Lori Lightfoot, Chicago. That's front page right now, Breitbart.com. Why are they not running the story of the neo-Nazi? Why are they not covering the neo-Nazi who committed an act of domestic terrorism? Right. I can only assume at this point in time bad intent and bad faith argumentation, that when you choose to... Okay, there's a white supremacist. Why try to cover for the white supremacist by talking about Lori Lightfoot?
Well, and what's the undertone of that too, right? If you say, what about crimes in Chicago? The people saying that aren't saying crimes happen all over the place. How do we stop gun violence in general? What they're saying is, what about black people who kill black people?
Right.
That's the undercurrent.
Yeah.
Like, that's the undertone, which in itself is, in my opinion, racist.
Yeah.
Because it is attempting to say racism doesn't exist by doing a pretty messed up diverting of attention.
Right. And like, there is this fixation. I wish that so many of my conservative friends would drop it. There is like this fixation where when there is a Nazi or there is a domestic terrorist or there is an incel or you name it, like the little Nazi who shot up who killed 20 people in El Paso or the Nazi in Santa Barbara. There is this like this fixation on immediately going to the defensive. And I'm like, why are you guys doing this? Like, if you're an American conservative, that is pretty far away from neo-Nazi ideology, right? In terms of a socialist state that is run and funded by a government bank, right? It's pretty far and away, like Ronald Reagan, pretty far and away from what we might consider to be like a Nazi category.
Yeah.
Why then? It's almost like pathological, like they're trying to hide something. Why then would all of a sudden when we find, okay, yep, here's his manifesto. It's 180 pages. He's a Nazi sympathizer and he hates conservatives. Well, there you go. And then all these commentators coming out of the woodwork. Oh, he's not. The liberal media is trying to blame us, but we're not actually neo-Nazis. We're actually just regular conservatives. And I go, no one's accusing you guys. Like, what are you doing?
Right. It's a defensiveness. It's literally weird. A defensiveness, because so many people have never had to think of, like, how do other people perceive me? If you are a like middle-aged to older white dude, you have spent, and I'm not saying you haven't, again, I'm catering it to as though an audience is defensive, which like maybe isn't fair to members of that audience who are not, but there is a good chance you have spent less time in your life thinking about how others perceive you based on your race and like status or whatever place in life than has, let's say, a black woman who's kind of on the other spectrum, right? Who has been subject to sexism, but also racism. It doesn't mean that race doesn't factor into the experiences, the life experiences of both of those people. It just means that one person is in a world that throughout the course of history, the results are she is more disproportionately affected by her race and is therefore thinking about it from a very young age. So I almost think it's like it's people who don't know how to think about race, specifically like white people let's say that something's like, you know, hey, we have found that I'm just saying this. I don't have these stats in front of me. So know that this is an example. I'm not saying it.
Sure.
Let's say that we have found that the majority of domestic terrorism cases are committed by white men between the ages of 18 and 32.
That's true.
Let's just hypothetically say that's the case, right?
Yeah.
Then what can you take apart from that and what can you piece about it is such a healthier way to try to address that than to say, well, not all white men are like that.
Right. Yeah.
So I wonder if some of the biggest cries of defensiveness, I think, come from people who are in that group and who feel like something that all of us know to hate, racism, right? Nazis are being attributed to them. And it's like, I don't know how to tell people to separate it and to not get so defensive.
Right. 'Cause
I understand the mechanism, but we're not going to move forward if we're going to just pretend that there aren't patterns with some pretty serious crimes.
Yeah, and I think like if Breitbart, I'll give you another example. Let's just say the headline today from Breitbart was growing list of domestic terrorism in the United States shows that 27 out of the last 28 mass shooters came from fatherless homes. That would be a much more compelling headline because it is the truth of the matter, right?
Mm-hmm.
27
mm-hmm.
out of the last 28 mass shooters come from homes without dads. That tells me something about the mentality of what it means to make a little sociopath, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's something in my throat. If they ran something that was like physical violence against children shows marked increase in violent tendencies in teenage boys, that would be a great headline to run on the day that a young white man who comes from a divorced household who was likely subjected to physical mm-hmm. abuse commits a crime. I don't know why the fixation is on there's a neo-Nazi who just intentionally murdered 10 black people. Now let's talk about how the Democrats are mean to us. Boo! It's like that is sociopathy of the highest order. And
why do you think? I'm asking not rhetorically, but genuinely.
Yeah, I think that it's a game. I think for a lot of these outlets, whether it's the Daily Wire or Breitbart, today it's Fox News, it's a game. It's an optics game, and they know how to play it. And this is the way that you play it, which is to be A, run defense, and then B, talk about how you're a victim, how you are actually the victim in this circumstance. So, for instance, I don't want to say the name of the commentator, but there was a very prominent political figure who was listed in this guy's manifesto. And he was depicted as a Jewish rat, because this shooter's manifesto was just an anti-Semitic screed effectively. And right. This commentator today was like, yeah, how could have I contributed to this? This guy hated me. This guy didn't like me at all. How could I? Everyone's blaming people like me. I could have never contributed to this. It's like the desire to be included or the desire to paint yourself as a victim when you are in fact not, when you are sitting in your nice air-conditioned studio and you are in no way, shape, or form a victim of the media's portrayal of you or of any kind of violent attack. It's astonishing. I think Breitbart does it because it gets clicks and they know what their audience wants, and their audience wants to be reaffirmed that they're not actually Nazis, but they don't need to be reaffirmed because most of them, I'm sure, are not actually Nazis. I think that's what it is. I think it's a big optic game and they know that's how you have to play it.
Well, and I think too, this is the hardest thing for me to remind myself of, that there are people who have no genuine or sincere interest in the health of society outside of money that they can get. Like, it's like a really cold way to look at it, that there are going to be people that are like, what gets eyeballs? What gets clicks? What gets me money? And if it's anger, why would I have any interest in not feeding that monster?
I don't know why they want to, Stacey. They want to, I guess, all these different outlets. They want to feed the beast. Breitbart, Daily Wire. I mean, you name it. They just want to feed that anger machine and get these people so mad. Another example, Stacey. I was initially going to talk to you about this when I saw this morning. When I went on r/conservative today, I'm scrolling down and I'm seeing literally hundreds of comments underneath everything that has to do with the Buffalo shooter, right? Just hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of comments, people saying he's not a conservative. The left is trying to make it out to seem like all conservatives are Nazis. And as I go down, just hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of comments. And then I get to a story which talks about how there is an investigation being done into members of Congress and members of the Senate who have committed campaign finance fraud. And it looks like that number is going to be about 60. So can you guess how many comments were underneath that when we talk about government corruption?
Five.
Not a single one. Not a single one.
Not even five.
No. So the preoccupation with like the left and the liberal media has distracted all these people so much that when there is a story which actually has substance to it, in which there are 60 members of both the House and the Senate that potentially could be fined tremendous amounts of money for campaign finance fraud, they don't care anymore. Because it's not about the actual corruption that occurs within the United States. It's about the woke Democrats are coming to destroy blah, 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 blah. And it just ends up being that bizarre optic game that you and I talked about, where the conversation doesn't move forward, doesn't go anywhere, and they're just kind of re-entrenched in their awful ideology, Stacey. Appreciate you coming on, though, Stace. Appreciate it.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's a tough topic, but it was an interesting conversation about, like, why are things covered the way they are?
Yeah.
Why do people react to it the way they do? Which I could talk about endlessly and also learn a ton about, right? Like, that's an important part of it, too.
To end on a happy note, I spoke with Aaron Mason last Thursday, and he spoke very, very highly of you, if I can pass that on. And on a nice happy note, he was like, Stacey Joe Ross, super talented, love Stacey Joe Ross.
I have to tell you, by the way, that I was at a Nordstrom Rack the other day.
Ooh.
And the person at the counter was, which in itself, great story. The person at the counter was like, oh my gosh, I recognized your voice. He was like, I listened to you and Jack. And he loved Aaron Mason. Like, I love Jack Stein. I swear to God. I am not.
That's so cool.
I am not just saying this. And I was like, thank you. Because at first, of course, it's actually a detriment to me because I was like, oh, Jake and Stacey on 710. He was like, no. Oh, God. Sounds horrible. Absolutely not.
Stacey, you're the best. We'll take a really quick break. We'll be right back with our local update right after this. People should know this. So for the other shows that happen, when those shows are done, the producers generally send out a list of all the stories that host covered. And so if you want to, you can kind of see like, oh, John Curley was talking about this, or Gian Ursula were talking about that, whatever it is. So Nicole, Dory's producer, releases their show sheet this afternoon, and I saw that Dory was talking about the swimsuit edition of Sports Illustrated. And I thought, that's how out of touch I am, Shane. I didn't even know that they had released the swimsuit edition of Sports Illustrated. Did you know this?
I mean, it's usually something that comes around all the time. I mean, right. It's as a young man, I always had it marked on my calendar when it came out.
Right. Okay. So so they decided that this year was going to be the 59th issue, celebrating 28 powerful women in an inclusive range of backgrounds and body types. Which I'm like, I'm okay with that. I like the thick ladies.
Mm-hmm.
I like the thin ladies. I like the busty ladies. I got no problem with any of this. And so they start off with Kim Kardashian, which is like, okay, I guess this is 2012. I mean, I guess we can have Kim Kardashian in the swimsuit issue. And then they go to Ciara, who is, I guess she is a singer, and she is Grammy.
She's married to Russell Wilson.
Oh, okay. There you go. There's another good one right there. And then going down, they have Mae Musk, who is a model who's been modeling for 50-some-odd years, and she is CoverGirl's oldest spokesmodel at age 69. You know what I'm talking about, Shane.
Nice.
And that's nice. And then they go to Yumi Nu, who is a Japanese and Dutch recording artist who made her Sports Illustrated swimsuit debut in 2021. And I'm looking at Yumi Nu, and I can't help but think, Shane, I know that we're supposed to celebrate different body types, and I know that we're supposed to celebrate different kinds of people. I draw the line, though, when we are celebrating people who are obese. At that point in time, I don't think that it's fair or nice or kind or cute to celebrate people who are clearly unhealthy. One of the things that I don't like about this, Shane, is that people say, you're body shaming. You're body shaming. Don't body shame people. People have different genetic makeups. People have different genetic attributes, which is, like, totally true. There are thick girls out there. There are thick boys out there.
Bless them all.
I'm not... Bless them all. Bless them. I have no problem with people who are larger than other people. But there is a certain threshold for as much as people don't want to admit it, at which point you are obese, at which point you are medically obese, and that is unhealthy. And I don't know when we all got so stodgy about that, Shane. I don't know when we all got so weird and, like, rigid about saying you are fat. Fatness is not good for you. You can afford to lose 20 or 30 pounds. I'm not saying that everybody has to look like you or I, Shane, that we have to. Right? I'm not saying that everybody's got to look like perfect Adonis figures with rippling abs. What I am saying, though, is that there is an actual medical condition called obesity in which you are now unhealthy. You are now actively damaging your body. And I'll say this, Shane, when I was in Maui, I don't know if it was just me and kind of being out and about in the world and noticing things. But when I was at the resort and, you know, you see people from all over the country, I saw a tremendous amount of people that had hip problems, knee problems, ambulation issues, walkers, people who looked like they were in their 50s and their 60s. And it's largely because they were fat and sedentary. They didn't move a whole lot, and they were clearly obese, and so their body had become this kind of prison for them. And so they had walkers and canes and knee braces, and they were on the beach, and they were looking very unhappy. So why can't we say that once you are at a certain threshold of weight, you are officially unhealthy? Like, we do it to drug addicts all of the time. We do it to alcoholics all of the time. We do it with gambling addicts all of the time. We point out inconsistencies or shortcomings in people's behavior on a regular basis. But for some reason, if you're fat, we're told, oh, don't, no, 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 no. You can't say anything about fat people because then you're going to hurt their feelings.
I don't know, man. It's a strange thing because if you think about, this is the way I'm thinking of it, because you brought up a lot of points that I would have obviously gone to. A lot of, you know, some people, you know, they got the bigger bones in their family. They got the wider shoulders. Mm-hmm. But I think some of this has to be with the fact is when I remember being, you know, a little kid or young, there was this, like, basically like this social pandemic. I don't even like to use that word for it, but it was this, there was this huge stress around that America had some of the heaviest kids and that there were tons of overweight kids. And it's just like, I think that those kids, that were struggling with that and had that spotlight put on them and been like, oh, bad, 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 when they were younger. As they progressed and gone into older and now are in these spaces where some of them, you know, might be, you know, doing the Sports Illustrated or, you know, whatever. It's this progression of just being maybe traumatized and also using food and that idea to just kind of progress through that way. And now it's just gotten to where it is now, where people are trying to make it more acceptable, which I agree with. Let them be thick. Thickums all the way. I'm with them.
I'm not saying, Shane, that
I know you're not saying that.
Natural size. Shane, I mean, this is what I'm saying, right? Like, you think I can't hang out with some thick ladies, Shane? You think I'm talking about a sophisticated mama, a brick house.
Oh yes.
Someone who is mighty, mighty, letting it all hang out. You think I can't get down? I can get down, Shane. I'm all about those thick ladies, but this is my...
Me too. Thick lady radio right here on Cairo Nights. You heard it here.
What I'm saying, though, is that if you're thick, I want you to be thick. If you keep it juicy, juicy, if you eat that lunch, if I can see it from the front, I want to see it from the back. You know what I'm talking about, Shane. I'm not talking about those ladies, Shane. I'm talking about people who are clearly suffering in the prison that they have constructed for themselves around their bones and their muscular structure. I see, again, when I was in Maui, Shane, I saw a guy, couldn't have been more than 55 years old. The guy was probably around 350, maybe 375. And he looked miserable. He looked absolutely miserable. Now, and he had knee braces on, and he's trying to go up these stairs, and I'm thinking to myself, God, should I help? Should I go try to help that guy up the stairs? Like, he looked absolutely miserable. So I said that to say this. If we live in a world where you're asking me to turn a blind eye to that and not say anything about it, I just can't do it. I just can't do it. And if you want me to live in a world where we encourage people to do the best that they can and to be as active as they can and take walks every so often and eat lots of meat and eat lots of fats or whatever it is, I'd much rather live in that world where people can have those kinds of conversations rather than, ooh, maybe we shouldn't talk about fat people because it might hurt their feelings. That's all I'm saying, Shane. That's all I'm saying.
I get you. I still like the idea of let him be thick, dude. Like Marie Antoinette, let him eat cake, man.
All right, we'll take a really quick break. We'll wrap all this up right after this. Right now and have a nicotine lozenge in my mouth because I have not had one, Shane, since the beginning of the show. And so I need to have my nicotine lozenge in my mouth, which is a major no-no in talk radio. You're not supposed to have anything in your mouth, no drinking, no eating, and I'm going to violate that right now because I feel cranky. Pleasant Paul joins us. Hi, Paul. Very pleasant to have you today.
I'm hoping to brighten the mood, but I did an ad read for my Rockies podcast today, and I did an ad read with a mouthful of marshmallows today. as you can imagine how well that ad read went with that.
So wait, is this a Cairo podcast or is this just a Pleasant Paul podcast?
It's a Pleasant Paul podcast, but it's called the Locked On Rockies podcast. There's all sorts of Locked On podcasts for just about every team, and I cover the Colorado Rockies.
So last time we spoke, you got a tooth replaced, right? Last time we spoke?
That does sound about right. We're happily full mouth of teeth. It's been a nice, enjoyable experience not having to, the retainer with the fake tooth was the weirdest part, honestly, because I carried around this.
I miss it.
It was just like, this is just a funky little device. It's just a retainer with a glob of medical paste or something that mimics a tooth. And, but it was just, the worst part about it was I tried my best to keep it clean, but after like a day, it just seemed nasty and dirty. Yeah. So I eventually just said, you know what? I double checked and I confirmed. They were like, no, it's just for aesthetics. So I was like, I'm going to wear a mask everywhere. So I embrace the toothless face, but I don't miss it whatsoever. I'm right, happy to have a mouthful of teeth again.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I lost two of my teeth to my drug addiction, and so there's literally I have all of the teeth that an adult human being needs to have, and then literally two of them on the side of my mouth are gone, which is a mega downer. Because whenever I eat anything now, I have to chew exclusively almost on the right side of my mouth. So, Pleasant Paul, how are you feeling outside of your new tooth joy?
You know, I'm feeling pretty good. It's been I've been feeling here in and around the station. Let's see, I've run a Mariners game. I've been on the news desk.
Wow.
I've done all sorts of stuff around here. So keeping baseball keeps me busy, and then you know, Cairo keeps me pretty busy as well.
Do you insist that people call you Pleasant Paul, or is that only on nights?
That's only on nights. I want to, you know, it's my exclusive branding. You know, if you want the real Pleasant Paul experience, you have to tune into Cairo Nights.
Well, I guess we're going to have to encourage everybody else to call you Pleasant Paul, because everybody else calls Sugar Shane Sugar Shane. And speaking of Sugar Shane, what's on your mind, boss? What are you thinking right now? Deep in the brain of Shane Peterson.
I had to dig deep for this one. I was shoveling through all the bad news, and I was like, what's something that happened to me recently that I'm happy and that I should be thankful for and that I should talk about? And my best friend got into graduate school, so I just wanted to take a quick second to shout out my boy Santino, my brother. Love this guy. He got into graduate school, and he's a guy that both me and him, we share a lot personally as people, and we also share kind of the drive for higher education and, you know, getting learned and learning new things and trying to push yourself as far as you can. So, yeah, shout out to the boy. Just wanted to put that out there.
I want to give a shout out to the fine people over at Amazon Basics, because I am quite a fan of their 2-milligram mini lozenge, nicotine lozenge. And Shane, as you know, I am 34 years old, and I've been quitting smoking ever since I was 28. That's right. I have not had a cigarette since I was 28 years old. And part of the reason for that is because of my wonderful nicotine lozenges. And I'm sure one of these days I'm finally going to quit. One of these days, but until that day comes where I no longer need sweet, sweet nicotine, I'm going to be enjoying my 2-milligram mini lozenges. It could be any company, really. Rite Aid, CVS, Target, Amazon Basics, Walgreens. Doesn't make any difference to me. But I appreciate them so much, so very much, that I don't have to smoke cigarettes anymore now that I have transitioned.
I think I got another reason why you want to keep sticking with the lozenges. Is lozenge a top tier word to say? Is there like lozenge is one of your is a word that you love to say, and any chance you get the chance to say lozenge, you want to use it.
Right. Also, ointment is another one that I really and cobblestone for some reason has always been a very phonetically pleasing word to me.
What about Shane? Haberdashery?
Haberdashery is a good one. That's a good one. Bodega, something to that effect.
Bodega is a great one.
Shane, do you have a word that you like? Is there a word?
I really love the word naivety. I think that is a really, really cool word.
Wow.
If I had that typed out in front of me on a newscast, that would trip me up. That word would trip me up, and I would probably I would stumble over that word.
All right. Well, let's get out of here so we can all wrap up our evening. Shane, would you care to do us the honors on this fine Monday evening, my friend?
Oh, I would love to. So for Mr. Pleasant Paul, I am Mr. Sugar Shane Peterson, and that is Mr. Talk Radio Jack Stein. And this is Cairo Nights. We're in your car, we're on your cell phone, your smart devices. We're in plenty of places.
We're in your house right now. We're in your basement.
We're in your mind, dude.
The call is coming from inside the house. All right, we got to go. Bye.